to get the no. So it's a bit of that self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, I don't want someone to say no to me, so I'm not going to ask them. But because you don't ask them.
Right. They don't have a chance to say yes. Hello and welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals and we invite really cool, interesting people on to help us. And today, Matt Boyle is with us. You are going to love hearing about him, hearing about his story, how he's been failing forward for more than 20 years, and how he can give you a lesson in persistence. Matt is a sales systems master. In 2016, he went on a trip to Thailand that changed everything because he made like a commitment to prevent poverty-driven exploitation through job creation. And today he helps B2B businesses generate more leads and improve sales conversions by combining his world-class systems with effective outsourcing while building new employment hubs in developing countries. And we're going to talk about some of that today, but we're really going to focus on how Matt has like mastered the whole entrepreneurship thing, because so many of us, right? I mean, I did the same thing. Like I tried something and I failed at it. And I said, oh, okay, I guess I'm just not cut out for this. So Matt, what happened when you tried? Well, tell us a little bit about how you got started as an entrepreneur.
Look, I've always wanted to be in business. Like I was the kid at school that said, yeah, whenever I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I want to be a baker. And they said, why? And I said, because bakers make lots of dough. Like that was that was it. So that's all I've ever known. You know, when I first got my driver's license, I was the first one in my grade. I would at lunchtime, I would sneak out early, I'd go up to the pizza stores and go buy half a dozen pizzas. And I'd pay $7 a pizza and then I'd go sell them for $5 a slice to my cohort. So I've always had that knack in me. So, you know, when we were 21, we went, you know, we'll sit in a cafe one day and we went, you know what, it'd be great to own a restaurant. I'd never worked in hospitality in my life. So we'd already owned, we'd already bought our first house and were, you know, had done some renovations to it. So it was, we had lots of equity. So we sold our house, got married, moved across Australia and bought this restaurant. And I was telling my dad as we were doing this, and my dad said, look, I don't care what you do, but you just need to go talk to a family friend whose name was Jimmy Val. He said, you need to go talk to Jimmy because Jimmy owns 2 fast food chains and 4 restaurants. And he said, go talk to Jimmy, get his advice and you'll be, you know, then I'm happy. And I remember I'm sitting there, we're talking to Jimmy in his restaurant, and he's looking at the financials and looking at the pictures and remembering this guy's got 2 chains. I think there was about 15, you know, fast food outlets between the two of them and 4 restaurants. And he's saying, don't do it. You're going to lose. You're going to lose everything. You know, it's the rent's too high. The expense is too high. It's in a shopping center. Don't do it because of blah, 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 blah. And he listed all the reasons why that this was destined to fail. And he goes, let me find you something that you can make money out of. I'm like, no, you don't understand, Jimmy. It's here, it's on the river, it's this, it's perfect. So I completely, as a young 21-year-old that knew everything, shut him down. Yeah, I shut him down and I said, mate, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to do it. My instincts are right on here. And, well, 18 months later, they kicked us out. They locked the doors. We'd lost everything. Everything that Jimmy said would come true did. So it was the biggest learning curve that I've ever been on. It was probably the best thing, in hindsight, the best thing to ever happen to me, because I got that smack in the face as far as what it really takes to run a business, what it really takes to be successful, looking at cost control, management, and all that kind of things that up until that point, I had no idea I needed to know. You know, I had no idea what a balance sheet was then. It was just going, you know, oh, we've turned over $40,000 this week. Great, I'm going to go spend $40,000. That's what you do, don't you? You've got money in the bank, you spend it. And so, yeah, it was a great, it was a horrible experience, but it was the best learning curve. And it was something that where I was at and where my DNA was at, I needed that reality check You know, like I don't believe that everyone needs to fail to become successful. But I know I certainly needed to get that smack in the face and that reality check to put my ego in place to be able to kind of, you know, do, you know, be able to learn what you need to learn and go, oh, I'm not 6'8" and bulletproof and, yeah, you know, where my legs on the outside. I'm not Superman. I've got faults, I've got weaknesses, I've got areas that I can fail and failure hurts. So, you know, that was our kind of first foray into business. And, you know, part of the recovery through that, because bankruptcy here in Australia is totally different to bankruptcy in the United States. It's a lot. It's, you know, 20 years after the fact, I'm still paying the price for going bankrupt. It was 3 years before you could even begin to rebuild. And, you know, we when we got out of bankruptcy after 3 years, our first loan that we took to rebuild our credit rating was 32% interest we were paying.
Wow. Like,
it was astronomical. But it put me into the situation of getting me back into sales. So it's one of those things that it kind of led me to point B, which led me to point C, and, eventually led me to where I am now. So that got me into sales.
Wow. Interesting.
And as we were kind of going through this bankruptcy, we had a couple of things with my wife's parents, got sick, so we had to care for them and support them financially. We kept having kids. So we had 6 kids in 8 years without having any kids.
How's that happen? Like, where are these kids coming from?
Oh, mate. I don't know. I think I slept through half of it. It was crazy. But, you know, we had all these things happening to us where, you know, back then I was going, man, like life sucks. Like, you know, like, well, what's happening here? And, you know, now again, I can look back on it and go, it was meant to happen exactly that way because it built this character, it built this resilience. But, you know, I had to go sell. I had a growing family to support financially. I was the sole income, you know, so I couldn't sit around and rest on my laurels. So I got stuck into sales and just happened to master it because, you know, started out of desperation and then, you know, it turned into a passion. So I just got really good with sales. I saw back in about 2007 that the internet was starting to change how people were buying.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, businesses were just starting to figure out, oh, we need to market online. So I kind of was one of the first guys to see this shift and started to deep dive into that. And at the time I was working in the automotive industry. So I went into my boss and said, we got to figure this out, and convinced him to let me lock myself in an office and figure out how to sell cars over the internet.
Wow.
So today everyone goes, well, that's what we do. Back in 2007, that wasn't the case. Like, it was just
not at all.
The internet was just annoyance.
Yeah.
So we figured that out, and right at the time then, when, you know, a couple of years later, when other dealerships started cottoning on, I was the guy that had all the answers.
Yeah.
So I was able to leverage that into my second business, which was training dealerships how to sell cars over the internet, and that grew us really rapidly at the right time. And we had 4 offices around Australia and about 60 dealerships, and we were training about 3,000 salespeople. And that happened pretty much overnight. Like, it was right timing. You know, the fact that they had all these questions and we were the only people that had the answers. So we just, you know, for about 3 years, I just flew around Australia training dealerships and putting systems in place and all of that kind of stuff. And then we led to 2015. When I meet someone who's working over in Thailand, and I start hearing the stories about what he's doing with rescuing women and rescuing kids, and, you know, the depravity, which is exploitation and trafficking, and I convince him to go over to Thailand, and I spend 3 weeks doing this, rescuing girls and women, and, you know, going into brothels and pretending that I'm interested in these girls to effectively buy them off these traffickers.
Wow.
And be able to set them free. And that's when everything changed, and I went, there's got to be more to life than just making a profit. You know, up until that point, I was looking 100% on me and my family and making as much money as I could.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment I went, oh, there's actually so much more I can actually give. I have to give. I have to do something to help these people. And, you know, my whole perspective changed. And we literally changed the business in a heartbeat and went, well, we're not going to train these salespeople anymore, because one of the things that I couldn't stand was the fact of none of these salespeople that I was training wanted help. None of them wanted me to be. None of them wanted me to be there. And I knew that 30 days after I left, even though I've been paid, I've walked out with a suitcase full of money. 30 days after I left, they would not be doing anything, and everything that I taught them would be completely forgotten about. So I went, well, if I can take all the stuff that I'm teaching people, and I can figure out how to automate it and how to outsource it and how to do it in a way that is going to actually improve the results for businesses, they'll still give me that suitcase full of money. But instead of me training them, I'll just build the systems and build the team.
Yep.
And then I can go create jobs, and I can build an employment center in Thailand, in the Philippines, in Cambodia and Vietnam and all these places where there's poverty and exploitation. I can go build this employment center. I can go create jobs and give these women and kids an option other than prostitution and other than drugs and other than all that other stuff. So that's where that's where our kind of journey took a nice big pivot. And yeah, we changed it in a heartbeat. And yeah, that was another fun experience, because me being the visionary and still not really understanding financial forecasting, and I now have a CFO that manages my finances. So I learned cover your back and have someone that minimizes your weaknesses, because I had no idea how much it was going to cost. I had no idea how long it was going to take. And through that journey, we went through financial disaster a second time. We lost our house, everything that I'd spent 15, 16 years building back up.
Wow.
Got given away. We did go bankrupt a second time, but we literally got wiped out where we had $50 to our name.
Wow.
And at that time, single income with six kids, you know, it was hard. And, you know, I sat there at this place, and I just, as it was all kind of falling apart, and because like in so many cases in business, the owner thinks it's fine until it's not, because the owner has that resilience and going, well, if I could pull this string and this string and this string, you know, it's going to be fine. And, you know, you're always playing that juggle. And then as soon as you drop one plate, everything else falls. And that's what happened with us, that it was very, very quick. It was very sudden. It was like, it was fine. And then we got the knock on the door, and then we said, you know, you've got 30 days to get out of the house, because it's not yours anymore. Wow. And, you know, that was what we thought was our dream house. That was that. I had a couple of classic cars that, you know, I had to sell one for pennies on the dollar, and I had to swap one for a Hyundai i30, which, you know, picture having a Shelby Mustang and having to swap that for a Hyundai. And that's what I had to do. So, you know, but that was just that, from, you know, from that dark point, you know, the words that kept coming through me were, just keep going, because you're in so much pain. You've had so much. If you stop now, none of that goes away. You know, if you stop now, all of that pain's for nothing.
Yeah.
Where if you keep moving forward, I promise you it'll be fine. And from, you know, I just made that commitment, and for 3 years in a row, we doubled the business profits, and we really kind of got on that good growth curve. We, you know, while doing that, we did some deals in the property market and bought some cheap property, renovated and flipped it. And 4 years after, we'd kind of made back everything we'd lost, and then some more. So yeah, it's been a long journey,
and kind of a roller coaster.
Yeah. Oh, it's been fun.
But you stayed with that business in Thailand, right? You just continued to evolve that.
Yeah, I just continued. I really had no choice. I wanted to quit. You know, I wanted to give up. I wanted to go back. But I really, as I kind of sat there and, you know, was sort of looking at the options of going, well, if I go back and get a job, that job's going to pay me a quarter of what I can earn in my own business. So I'm going to stay buried in debt. I'm going to stay struggling for the rest of my life if I go back to a job.
Yeah.
And I went, well, if I go start another business, I'm starting from scratch. I haven't got any buffer. I haven't got any money. You know, I haven't got anything that I can go get an investor. I can't get a loan. So I can't get any more money. So I can't change direction. So I've really got two choices, die or figure out how to make this business work. And dying wasn't a choice.
Right.
So it was just figure out how to make it work. And, you know, I kind of went, well, there's three key time zones I can work in. I can work in the United States in the morning and I can get up at 3 a.m. and I can work in the United States until they're into business. Then I can work in Australia. And then in the afternoons, then I can work in the UK. So I literally for 3 years, like this, the key to doubling my business 3 years in a row.
Where's the sleeping part?
I didn't move. You know, I literally sat in front of my computer screen doing video calls and marketing and generating leads and hustling and just working harder than anyone has ever worked in their life for that 3 years to fix it all up. And between that, I'm project managing and renovating a property.
Which is a full-time job by itself.
Which is a full-time job. And, you know, that was that's what I needed to do. Like I had, there was no other choice. I could sit there and wallow in my misery and stay broke and not actually be able to make this impact. And, you know, it's one of those things, it's really hard to explain until something really touches you and you get moved at the depth that I did, where it wasn't about me, it wasn't about my family, it was about this. It just, that trip to Thailand just moved this passion in me, you know, in a way that I said, I really struggled to, you know, to explain how much that impacted me and how much that drove me. And, you know, that was the thing as I was kind of, you know, working. It was just, no, I've got to make this difference. I've got to be able to do it. And, you know, I figured it out. It just, you know, I figured it out ugly. And then I've just got more efficient and more efficient and more efficient. And, you know, that's where the growth came from.
Wow. But let's just step back a little bit, because you said, you know, when you lost your first property and the whole restaurant thing didn't work, that you got into sales. And for a lot of people, sales is the hardest part of their whole business. I mean, do you feel like you had an aptitude for it, or did you have to kind of slog through and figure it all out?
Look, I had to figure it all out. Like I had, you know, one of the biggest reasons why people hate sales and struggle with sales is it's actually hardwired into us. Go back to caveman days. It's hard, it's hardwired into us where you need to be part of the pack in order to survive. Like if you think back to caveman days, if you got shunned from the pack, that meant you were out on your own and the woolly mammoths are going to come and the cold's going to come and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, back then you needed to be part of a tribe and part of a pack. Otherwise you died. So deep down in our kind of DNA, that's still part of it. So many people have this massive fear, and it's a subconscious fear about being rejected. They have fear about someone saying, no, I don't accept your offer, I don't accept that. And and it's actually because it's you know, subconsciously that means death.
Right.
And because of that big fear, it controls so much so when people are then going and selling or trying to sell, they never want to actually sell properly because they're too scared about being rejected. They don't want to do the hard work. They don't want to pick up the phone and make 200 phone calls in a day. They don't want to ring that prospect. They don't want to ask that tough question. They don't want to be perceived as trying to sell someone. So they don't do any of the work properly, and therefore they don't get the results. And look, I was the same. When I started my sales training business, I had this massive fear about rejection, and because I'd, you know, my first business had failed and I had this massive fear over failure, I had to go watch this video on YouTube for 45 minutes to build up the confidence to make the phone call. You know, and it's this video where there's this high school football coach revving up his team before the game. It's called I'm a Champion, and you know, it's got the Last of the Mohicans soundtrack in the background, and you know, it was just spine tingling. But I had to watch that over and over and over and over and over again to get myself in the mindset to make that one call. But I knew, because I'd kind of been, I'd read enough books and studied sales, knew that if I was scared and insecure and, you know, worried about what they were going to say, I'd fail. So you're better off spending the time to get into that zone,
yeah,
you know, to get into that place where, you know, I'm just that animal. I'm just completely in control, completely centered, completely confident. So then when I made the phone call, it was like, bang.
Interesting. Well, that, yeah, I mean, that's really a tactic that I don't know if enough people use. That is like before they have to do something that's difficult for them, that's outside their comfort zone, or that's just something that they don't feel, you know, that just doesn't feel like you're a natural at it, that to take the time to get your mind in the right place so that you can really get a beyond any kind of like loose wires up there that are trying to tell you that you're going to fail. Well,
this whole thing that when you look at all the communication, depending on the study that you're reading, between 50 and 70% of all communication is nonverbal. So the words that come out of your mouth when it comes to talking and communicating, the words that you come out of your mouth only make up a fraction of what people receive. Your tone, your pace make up a big chunk. But then there's this other nonverbal communication that makes up the biggest thing, which is the intent behind the words. And, you know, I've been gone in some deep tangents. So I started studying quantum physics and looking at all this kind of stuff. And there's actually this thing called ether, which, you know, you and I are looking at a computer screen now, we're on the other sides of the world. But between us right now, there is a connection. So you're picking up on the words that I'm saying that are coming out of my mouth, the tone, the pace, but you're also picking up on the intent behind it.
Right.
And that comes from that state of mind. So if I'm saying to myself right now, I hope she's going to like what I'm saying, and I hope they're going to agree with this. And look, I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if this is the right message. I don't know if this, like, if I'm starting to doubt myself, yeah, and that's the word that's going on in the noggin there, then I might be saying the right things, but I'm not saying them with the right meaning. And you're picking up on that insecurity. Now, again, you don't know that it's insecurity. You don't know what's really going on. You just don't feel the vibe.
Right. Right.
And, you know, when selling is a transference of emotion, you know, and your job is to take someone that's sitting on the fence and has a possibility of saying yes or a possibility of saying no, your job is to push them off the fence and get them to make a decision.
Yeah.
And you can't do that if you're insecure. You can't do that if you doubt, if you're doubting yourself. You can't do that if you're questioning that. You definitely can't do that if you're scared of no, because for me, authentic sales is leading them to a decision that's best for them. And that could be no.
Right.
Or it could be yes. And if you actually look at the numbers, most people in selling, you're going to get 3 to 4 times the amount of no's as you are yeses. So, you know, you've got to be centered in yourself. You've got to be able to banish those conversations and replace them with this is me. This is what I'm doing. This is valuable for them. It's valuable for me. I need it. They need it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to lead them to a decision. If they say no, that's fine. And if they say yes, that's fine.
But what you said, though, is very powerful, because you want the person to make the decision that's best for them.
Absolutely.
And if you truly want to serve rather than sell, right, then it's a whole different conversation and people feel that difference.
Totally. They pick up on that intent. And, you know, if as long as no is a possibility in your process and you encourage it, it comes across so much better. But then, you know, if you kind of take the visual representation of the scales, you've got the yes and the no. Because most people are scared of going for a no, there's actually a third pendulum that just ends up taking all the weight off, which is the maybe bucket.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of things falling into the left or the right, the yes or the no, things get stuck in the middle in the maybe. And the maybe always leads to no. So you're getting, you know, the 1 out of 10, 1 out of 5, or 1 out of 4 that want to say yes are getting caught up in the maybe, which end up being a no because you're too scared to get the no. So it's a bit of that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't want someone to say no to me, so I'm not going to ask them. But because you don't ask them,
right,
you don't receive.
Yes.
So it's that conundrum where you know, the biggest advice I give people when I'm starting to build processes for them and all that stuff is going, we want to encourage no. You know, we want to start, we want to build our processes with the point of we want people to say no at every junction. So those that say yes, it's easy.
Right. Yeah, if you know you're not going to do it. Like I try to tell people, sometimes I get these telemarketer calls. I'm like, use your time wisely and hang up the phone right now and talk to someone else because there ain't no way in hell I'm buying from you. So just like cut the cord. Stop trying to talk me to death and hang up the phone.
Totally. And then that comes back to sales management. Yeah. You know, most people these days are managing sales wrong, that they want you to overcome objections. I want you to understand where the objection's coming from, whether it's actually a curiosity objection or whether it's a flat-out rejection, and if it is.
Move on.
Ditch them, move on. Like, you know, don't waste your time. You know, if someone's not going to let you get your value prop out, don't try to convince them otherwise. Like, if they're there, move on.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually think these days there's a lot better strategies than telemarketing. You know, we actually, all of the campaigns we run are all what's called non-voice. So we're using direct messaging, we're using email, we're using other media to start conversations. We'll use voicemail drops to actually, you know, control the quality of the outreach, call 100 people, and then have the 5 that are interested call you back. So we build these campaigns to save a bucket load of time so you don't have to deal with a cold ass rejection that, you know, like when I was telemarketing and selling cars, I had someone get an air horn on the phone and said, here, you know, I did my pitch and she said, just wait here and come back a second. And she had an air horn blew in the phone and said, bugger off. And, you know, you don't have to go through that anymore. You know, there's better strategies. But it is that, you know, it's the way people manage sales is they want you to overcome the objections. They want you to hustle and work. And it's like, that's manipulation. Because if you ain't interested, you ain't interested.
Exactly.
And it's like, move on. You know, but if you are interested, then I have a God-given duty to, you know, lead you through all the decisions you need to make a purchase decision, make as much money as I can out of you. Because if I can make that money out of you, then I'm giving you 10 times value.
Right.
And you're receiving a lot more than I'm receiving. And that's what makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. And having that attitude, I think, is the key. That like, if you do buy from me, you're going to be so much better off than you are right now, if this is the right fit for you. Right. So if I'm, you know, helping you, if I'm going to be your coach and help you to buy, you know, to get your property on Airbnb, for example, right, then you're going to pay me like less than what you're going to make in a month. Right. So you're going to go forward and make all this more money because I care about making, you know, but if you don't want to do Airbnb, if you have no desire to house hack, right. Why should we even be having a conversation? I mean, we can talk about other stuff, but certainly we shouldn't be talking about my online course, right. Or my coaching or something, because it's stupid.
Like, it's a waste of time. If you've got zero interest in doing it.
Yeah.
Move on. You know, like it's, you know, as you know, I say to people, I've got enough friends. You know, I don't need friends. I don't need people that I'm talking to, strangers, to like me.
Right.
But those that are interested and those that need help with selling and those that need to build a team and scale their revenues and all that kind of stuff, you know, they need me. And they need what we do. And, you know, the value that they get is 10 times the value that they give.
Yeah.
And then that tenth that I get to give and go get 10 times value over here. I've got a moral obligation to go and do that. But, you know, if that's not you, that's fine. As I said, I've got enough friends. I'm you know, I know I'm secure in my pack and I know that you can say no to me. And that doesn't mean death. That just means, okay, we're not a fit or we're not a fit now.
Yeah.
That's fine. Move on. Move on to the next one.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, I wish more people had that attitude. I mean, you really have it nailed. And I think that is the sign of a good salesperson, is someone who just truly wants to find a solution for that person. Is, am I your solution? No. Okay. Well, maybe call George, you know, down the street. He's got actually could do what you need a little bit better, you know, or a little differently or something. You just want to I think of my, like, cause I'm a real estate agent. That's my
yep.
job. And I don't sell houses, right? I'm a matchmaker. I'm the matchmaker. I just like, if you, I just help you to see the, you know, things a different way, you know, just don't, oh, did you notice that this, you know, is a little crooked or whatever, you know, I just want you to make a great decision so that you are in love with the place that you find. And right. I'm not, this idea of like selling, you can't, that would be the worst thing in the world. Like I talk somebody into buying a house and then I see them 5 years later and they're like, you know, we hate that house so much every day.
I see the real estate agent that sold us our house. And, you know, I shared with you offline the story with our house that there's no way we should have been able to buy this. Like it was, you know, it's just a special, special property. It happens to be right next to the lookout that I was praying at 4 years ago. It's like got, you get the world's best sunrises, sunsets, you name it. I watched this property on the market for about 6 months and I looked at it probably every second day going, I wish I could afford it. I couldn't afford it. That, and the real estate agent who had shown us through a few other properties rings me out of the blue and said, I've got this new listing. It's just coming online. You know, it's not on the internet yet, but I know what you're looking for. It's going to be perfect for you. And so we went, okay, you know, went in and had a look through this house and we ended up making a full price offer. And because it wasn't quite on the market yet, they wouldn't sell it to us because they couldn't find anything else. It happened too quickly and what, you know, whatever. But we made them an asking price offer and good terms, but it just was too quick for them. And so through that process, I said, oh, what about this other house? I said, you know, and he goes, you know what? I reckon he'll take the money you've just offered on that. He's you know, he needs to sell it. He wants to sell it. And that, and, you know, my wife, I hadn't even told my wife about this house yet because I just knew we couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And so he drove us up the mountain and then had a look through it. And I had to convince my wife and I had to promise her that, you know, if she didn't like it, we would sell it after a year. And that was me selling into her. Yeah, but right. the real estate agent, all he had to do was pick up the phone and ring me. And I came to look at this one and we went, yep, we'll want to do this. And then when that fell through, all he had to do was drive me up the mountain and walk through. And I spent an hour walking around the house and I said, we're not signed.
Yeah.
You know, there was no selling involved. Right. But I see him every time I see him, I buy him a drink because, well, I've made so much money. By buying that house, he's helped us in that. But I've also had so much joy. I've had 2 years worth of watching amazing sunrises every morning, and I'd never have got that had he not picked up the phone and rang me.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, and I'd never have got that had he not, you know, been curious to go, well, when deal one fell over, to sit there and go, well, you know, how can we make something else work? Like if he hadn't done his job, if he'd just given up then. Yeah, he would have missed out. He would have missed out.
I guess Matt just doesn't like me.
Yeah, you know, he would have missed out. He got paid once, and I don't know what the commission is. It may have been $20,000 or something like that. He got paid out of it. So yeah, he got a nice big lick.
Yeah.
When we bought the house, I've made 50 times that just by buying it, but I've got to enjoy that sunrise every single morning. I've got to enjoy that sunset every single day. I pinch myself every single day going, I'm so lucky we've got this.
Yeah.
And had he not done his job properly,
yep,
I would have missed out on all of that. I'd be still struggling living in our little renovator flip, you know, an hour away from where we live.
Wow.
Kicking myself that I've missed the opportunity. Like, so, you know,
that's it. Because he knew that they would take what you were already offering, right? You didn't realize that they would be willing to do that. So later on, you would have found out it sold for that price and you'd been like, oh my God, I can't believe we could have had that house.
Absolutely. I would have missed out on everything had he not done his job properly. You know, so that's the flip side. Now that's someone saying yes. But the only reason I said yes is because he asked the questions and he did it.
Yeah.
You know, he did it right. Where had he just gone and, you know, just followed what a lot of people do and going, oh, well, that deal's fallen through. Next, move on.
Yeah, but he wanted to be a matchmaker. He wanted to make you happy. And what is it that you want? You know, I mean, you're going to buy something. Why not work together? You know, why can't I help you do that?
So it was fun, but yeah, it's that interesting perception that's what I see. Everyone that struggles with sales and everyone that struggles with marketing, you know, like not every one of our clients succeeds.
Right.
And I can build the world's best systems and I can do all of this stuff, but at some point in time, I need to hand it over to a client and I need to go, here, this is the lead. Here's all the information about them. Here's what they've said so far. This is what you need to say. And we'll hand them this, you know, we call them lead packs. You know, so by the time we hand the lead over, we've profiled them. We've got surveys. We've got this. We've got questions. Like, we give everything. So it's like, you know, it is literally like a walk, you know, walk up sale. Follow the plan of the lead pack and you'll be fine. And not everyone is successful. And, you know, that just comes down to not everyone wants to follow the process. They're not prepared to put the work in. They don't want to. They avoid it, which is fine. You know, that I look back at it now and go, they're obviously not in enough pain themselves. You know, they're not in enough discomfort that they can get away sticking in their comfort zone.
Right. Yeah, and not, comfort zone is scary, is like the worst place to be.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. Like, I...
Nothing good, you know, happens there.
I go train strongmen at the gym to get uncomfortable, to go, you know, and we'll just talking yesterday, we're going to do a 100,000-pound challenge next week. We're going to, you know, and this is, you know, me pushing myself so far out of my comfort zone, going, we're going to lift 100,000 pounds cumulative weight in an hour.
How many people are doing that with you?
No, just me.
No way. What?
Yep. And I'm probably going to fail, but I'm pushing myself out of that comfort zone. And I'd use it to go, well, you know, right, I think it's impossible. Let's just see. I can do it.
Or something? I mean,
no, it'll just be doing squats. So every squat's 200 pounds. Every deadlift's 250 pounds. Every bench press is 60, 80 pounds, 100 pounds, something like that. So we've got to work the strategy out. We've got to, you know, do it. We've got to do it. But it's just that cumulative weight. So if you lift 200 pounds 10 times, there's 2,000 pounds. So do that 50 times in an hour, you know. So it's a big, scary number. It's a big, scary goal. I sit there and go, I think I'm going to fail, but you know what? I'll give it a shot. It's out of my comfort zone, but it's to succeed. You've got to think of strategy. You've got to be prepared. You've got to be organized. So you've got to do everything like that.
Well, and if you don't and try, then, you're definitely going to fail. So
absolutely. So, you know, I use that to keep pushing my comfort zone. And I, you know, I'm getting, you know, I love the fact that I said I lift stupid heavy weights, but I push that, you know, and people go, have you done it? I said, well, 2 years ago, I was lifting half that. And I've just pushed myself every week, and I pushed to get better and stronger and that. And now I'm, you know, now I'm actually lifting that, you know. So it's that challenge of pushing yourself out of the comfort zone. But yeah, complacency and comfort are the death bell of entrepreneurship. You need to be uncomfortable. You need to be, you know, you need to be sitting with that nervous energy.
Yeah.
Going, I need to be doing something else. I need to be doing something more, because otherwise you're just not going to put in enough energy and effort and work into your mission, into your goal, into your business. And it also means when adversity hits you, because I guarantee you adversity is going to hit you in business at some point in time. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that kind of that resilience and that kind of comfort with being uncomfortable, you're not going to be able to adapt. You're not going to be able to, you know, deal with that and you know, in front of you, which means that's going to end up controlling it. So, you know, I live in that edge where I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite a good skill to cultivate for sure.
Oh, totally.
So Matt, you know, our time has flown. I'd love talking with you. I'm wondering, is there something that you wish I would have asked you that we just didn't have a chance to touch on? Is something that you're really dying to share with everybody that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet?
Mate, I think this has been great. Like, this is, you know, this is really well and truly been fun and talking about, for me, what really matters. And it's not the success, it's not this, it's about that sort of front line. What does it take to actually, you know, get things. So no, I don't think you've missed out on anything.
Awesome. So Matt, how can people reach you if they, I mean, everybody needs help selling stuff. Everybody who has, every entrepreneur needs skills. They need help. They need, you know, I feel like that's the number one drawback that people have when they're just getting started.
100%. So the two ways you can find me is if you go look up on LinkedIn, and I'm Matthew Boyle, Matthew spelt with one T. You'll find me on LinkedIn. We're fairly, you know, fairly big and spend a lot of time out there. The other place you can go to is the salesgrowthscorecard.com. And on there, that's a free tool we've put together that kind of helps you unpack some of the opportunities in selling that you can automate and you can outsource, and how you can kind of start to build some of the systems to help you take the heavy weight out of it, so leave you with more of the fun parts of the selling. So that's a really great resource you've got.
All right, great. Yeah, and all those links will be in the show notes, so you can check out if you drive and don't, you know, pull over and start to do this. We got you covered. And I'm sure that you got a lot out of what Matt was sharing and, you know, loving his story. If you think, stop now and think of somebody else who would really benefit from hearing from Matt, and just, you know, shoot them a copy of the podcast, because they will thank you. They will thank you for your help in getting their sales to a place where, you know, getting sales out of the fear zone and into the, you know, happy place. Thanks so much, Matt, for being with us today. And thank you, listener, for listening. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having us.